This means that Donald Trump will be the 45th president of the United States.
This is your life now. This is our election now. This is us. This is our country. It's real.
Hi, and welcome back to the 45th. Rabia here, and I'm joined by the great Miss Simpson. Hey, Susan, how you doing?
Hey, Rabia.
So we're coming back up for 2 weeks. We skipped a week for reasons, just reasons. But there's a lot, there's a lot to talk about. And mainly, of course, we're talking about the Senate impeachment trial, which has been ongoing for the last couple of weeks. And I see, Susan, I think you have like, what, 15 pages of notes on it? No, you have a lot of notes. But anyway, so we'll get to that. And right now, as we speak, it is right before the Senate's going to begin the questioning period of this trial, I guess 2 days, today and tomorrow, 8 hours each. So we'll cover that next week. But before we get into that, I did want to talk about some other big stories. And this is the problem with all this. It just drowns everything out. But there's some other really big stories, I think, that are important to mention. And then we'll meat and potatoes of this episode will be impeachment. All right. So the much anticipated Middle East peace plan was unveiled yesterday. The brainchild of Jared Kushner, who just yesterday said on CNN that because he was a real estate developer, he has the credentials to do this.
By the way, was this a thing they'd like planned on doing for? I mean, I know obviously
yes.
Wonder Boy Kushner's been in charge of the ultimate peace plan idea, but like, were they always planning to do it right now, or was that just like a sudden out of nowhere thing?
No, I think they had announced a couple of weeks ago that they've been working on it, but they were going to be unveiling it soon.
The announcement plan only came during impeachment, right?
I believe so. It also came, or did it come shortly after Netanyahu was indicted? But I remember it wasn't a complete surprise because I do have a vague recollection of it being mentioned not too long ago that it was coming up. In fact, last week, definitely they said they were going to be announcing it. But you're right. It could have been during the impeachment that they decided this. And, you know, a big old bone to, his friend Netanyahu, but also American evangelicals who, you know, this kind of gives. Well, let's just talk about the plan a little bit. Have you looked at some of the basics of the plan or any of it?
My brain has had no room for anything outside of impeachment.
Okay, that's good. So that's good. I want to talk about this plan. Now, first of all, it's important to know that there has not been any formal peace process between Israel and the Palestinians for a long, long time. So it's just been kind of a holding the status quo, but not really, because settlement building under Netanyahu has continued within the West Bank and Palestinian territories. And that's the biggest point of contention, because this plan, which Kushner keeps saying, it's 80 pages long. It's not like the previous ones that were 2 or 3 pages, which I don't think is true. But he's like, there's a map. So look at the map. And the Palestinian state, as this administration is envisioning it, is like, it's like somebody just took an egg and broke it against a wall, just splotch marks of little pockets, you know, like South African, you know, Bantustans just scattered everywhere, interrupted by Israeli enclaves. Now, there's a lot of shit wrong with this plan. One of the biggest problems is that no Palestinians were ever consulted in the making of this plan, which is, you know, problematic. Another big problem is right in the wake of this, so they made this announcement, Netanyahu was at the White House when they did this, and immediately Netanyahu announced that Israel would now formally annex all the settlements and consider them part of Israeli territory and part of the country of Israel. Now, that's never happened before.
Also illegal, by the way.
It is also illegal. It is
under international law. That's
yes.
Annexation. That's what Crimea was. It's not allowed.
It is not allowed. It's completely illegal. They're saying they're going to make this announcement soon, in the next week or so. That would be devastating to any future Palestinian state. That's kind of the end of any future Palestinian state. Now, this also has all kinds of conditions. So it's going to take all those settlements. It will do something like this is very problematic also, too. They're propositioning a population swap where, and that's part of the swap. So we'll take, the settlements will be ours under Israeli control. All the settlers living amongst Palestinian territories will only be in Israeli jurisdiction, but they will require also Israeli protection. So the checkpoints will remain, all of Palestinian territories, or the Palestinian state will remain under Israeli occupation. But another thing is that there is a place in Israel that's called the Arab Triangle, where basically it's a little concentration of towns that are primarily Palestinian, but they have Israeli citizenship. They're Palestinians who are living in the state of Israel. They're not part of the Palestinian territories all these years. So what Israel's proposing is that we will give you all the Arab triangle that will be part of the future Palestinian state. But what that means to those people living there is that they will be all stripped of Israeli citizenship. Now, I'll say this. I visited the Arab Triangle, I don't know, 5-6 years ago. And I remember we had a series of meetings with people who live there and community members and this and that. And I just always had the same question. I said, you know, even though there's a big push for Palestinian statehood, if there was a Palestinian state created tomorrow, would you want to be part of Israel or Palestine? And down to every single last Palestinian I spoke to who lives in that region, they said they would want to remain Israeli citizens. So this would effectively, you know, strip them of that without any input from them. Another big problem is that this new Palestinian state would have no ability to enter into agreements with any other states without Israeli permission.
Oh, so it's not a state at all.
It's not a state at all. Another big problem is that the international status
That's part of the deal?
That is part of the deal, yes.
That is literally not a state. It can't be
because it has no control of its borders. It has no control. It's completely demilitarized. It can, you know, it can't even. This is a complete no-go from the jump. I mean, it's really kind of shocking, and it's shocking because this is not like a negotiation from the center of Israeli. I would say like of the Israeli political kind of whatever you want to call it. This is like from the complete right. I mean, there are Israelis who have, and they have spoken out, including parliamentary members and others in the last day or so, saying this is ridiculous. Like, this is not going to help Israel. Basically, you're just making the status quo official, continuing the occupation, and also telling them this is your state, but it's completely not viable. Another big problem is that they want as part of this agreement and for the UN refugee organization to strip Palestinian refugees of the status of refugees, because there are a couple of million, maybe 3 or 4 million Palestinians living in other countries for decades as refugees, Jordan, Saudi Arabia, I mean, like, name it. So if they're stripped of that status, they become stateless in that country, because in those nations, they're not given nationality. They have remained there for, and this is a big problem, but they remain there for generations as refugees. However, this plan would also say that they do not have a right to return to this new Palestinian state. I don't know what the vision is there about what they're supposed to do.
That thing about this is it was workable. It's not even pretend workable. There's no conceivable way. Like, one of the bare bones, hopefully unnegotiable laws of international law is that you can't make someone stateless. You cannot deprive someone of citizenship of your state if that leaves them stateless. They're effectively making the Palestinian state they're imagining is not a state under any criteria of international law. So you can't strip Israeli citizenship from them and give them a non-state citizenship, and you can't leave these people stateless over the refugees. This is all nonsense. Like, what's the actual goal here?
Well, I think the goal is, I mean, like, the continuation of the settlements is to continue to expand Israeli territory. So they're going to, under this plan, they're going to say, well, it's officially ours now. These are no longer settlements. This is part of Israel proper, all through the West Bank and through the Jordan Valley. And that's been something that I think Netanyahu has there was a time when he was not a proponent of this, but in the last, 6-7 years, he'd become real hardline. And that's what he wants. And that's what really the most right-wing Israeli settlers want, because they say from the river to the sea, this is all ours. Like, it should all be ours. But here's my question. Okay, so let's say they make an official announcement that that's what we're doing. Who's going to stop them? Nobody.
It sounds like essentially what this is the U.S. announcing we're not going to stop Israel from taking these illegal actions and basically declarations of war.
Yes, the U.S. is saying that we're on board. I mean, it was basically America. Now, it's interesting. We have gotten a lot of basically all the Democratic candidates for running for president and many other folks, including legislators, have come out with some pretty strong statements against this. Saudi Arabia has chimed in and said, okay, well, it's something, and we appreciate America trying.
It's a thing,
and it's a place to start negotiations. But yesterday, Jared Kushner was doing the rounds in the media, and he had some pretty, pretty horrific things to say. So let's listen to a clip of Jared Kushner here.
You have 5 million Palestinians who are really trapped because of bad leadership. So what we've done is we've created an opportunity for their leadership to either seize or not. If they screw up this opportunity, which again, they have a perfect track record of missing opportunities. If they screw this up, I think that they will have a very hard time looking the international community in the face, saying they're victims, saying they have rights. This is a great deal for them. If they come to the table and negotiate, I think they can get something excellent.
So Jared Kushner,
look, we'll work through it.
Yeah, sorry.
All right, go ahead. So again, the Palestinian leadership have to ask themselves a question. Do they want to have a state? Do they want to have a better life? If they do, we have created a framework for them to have it, and we're going to treat them in a very respectful manner. If they don't, then they're going to screw up another opportunity like they've screwed up every other opportunity that they've ever had in their existence.
So I guess we'll see in the next week or two what moves the Israeli prime minister makes on this. You know, he's also facing prison, so there's that. Maybe he thinks this will save him. I don't know.
This is not a long-term strategy for anything. It doesn't solve anything other than it's just a short-term something.
Well, what it's doing is it's making the unsolvability of it permanent. Palestine will never exist. I mean, that's what they're saying. And a one-state solution is not possible because a one-state solution, and actually the former ambassador of Israel, I think his name is Dan Shapiro, he tweeted about this morning, is problematic because if they make it one state and say, okay, and there are lots of Palestinians I spoke to who said that they'd be happy with a one state. Let's put us all in one state. Israel's like, no, because that means we will no longer be a Jewish majority. And, you know, that consideration versus democratic, I mean, it's a big clusterf. It's not fixable.
But it's like this whole plan is not something you do if you think that a Palestinian people will continue to exist, which they will, unless... I mean, this is, wow, now I need to pay more closer attention. That's a nightmare scenario.
Yeah, it's pretty bad. All right, okay. Susan, do you know what the national average interest rate is on credit cards?
No. What is it?
It is shocking. It's actually over 20% APR.
Whoa.
That's the average national interest rate. Yeah, it's crazy. A lot of people don't realize how much they're paying in interest on your credit cards every single month. But a lot of us are paying way too much. But here's the thing. With Lightstream, you can consolidate your credit cards into just one payment with a lower fixed rate. So you get more money at the end of the month in your pocket.
It's easy with a credit card consolidation loan from Lightstream. Rates are as low as 5.95% APR with AutoPay, which is much lower than the national average. With Lightstream, you can get a loan of $5,000 to $100,000 with absolutely no fees. You can even get your money as soon as the day you apply. Lightstream believes that people with good credit deserve a better loan experience. And that's exactly what they deliver. Lightstream is also a division of SunTrust Bank. I've been a customer of SunTrust for literally my whole adult life plus some now. And they're a fantastic resource to check out.
And here is a direct customer testimonial. I applied for this loan after hearing an ad on the radio. Ever the skeptic, I decided to check it out anyway. I was amazed at how easy the process was and had the money in the bank account within 2 days. I would recommend this company to everyone. And that's not the only testimonial that reads like that.
Just for our listeners now, apply and get a special interest rate discount and save even more. The only way to get this discount is to go to lightstream.com/45th. That's lightstream.com/45th.
Subject to credit approval, rate includes 0.50 auto pay discount. Terms and conditions apply and offers are subject to change without notice. Visit lightstream.com/45th for more information. Speaking of the nightmare scenario, we are closer to the apocalypse, not just because of this stuff.
Every day brings us closer.
Every day brings us closer.
Literally.
But the last couple of years, apparently, the doomsday clock has accelerated. Last week, the Bulletin of Atomic Scientists moved us to 100 seconds to midnight. That's pretty, okay. Just to put this in perspective, in 2018, we were like minutes. We were like minutes away, like 4 or 5 minutes. Like we have really accelerated in the last couple years, mostly thanks to Trump.
And global warming, I think, which is, Trump has hindered our ability to respond even longer.
Yeah. The two biggest factors in this consideration is that, and by the way, they're like 15 Nobel laureates who are part of this committee. These are not a bunch of, you know, baddie activists. Number one is the threat of nuclear war, and the second is the environment. But, you know, they did cite extensively everything that this administration has done to lead us headfirst into nuclear war. Let's say, you know, stuff with North Korea's, you know, the negotiations collapsing.
Iran,
the White House is going to withdraw from the Open Skies Treaty. I mean, like, you know, what it's allowing Russia more freedom with nuclear proliferation. And so, anyhow, I thought I'd mention that. I just feel like things are really, really moving very fast on that. That was kind of scary to me. I don't know what that means, though. 100 seconds sounds like a couple of months.
I think it's like a it's a long time span here, but it's
100 years maybe.
Well,
not that long.
That sounds optimistic. No.
Okay.
The point of this is to try and the idea is that this can emphasize when certain points in our existence we have teetered towards making things more dangerous and making the likelihood of the apocalypse more prominent. Yeah. It's not unfixable. But it's something we need to look at really closely, really quickly.
Oh, yeah. The clock can be moved back if, for example, we fixed all this stuff that Trump has done on the nuclear front, but also, you know, like, let's say, re-entering the Paris Climate Treaty and that kind of stuff. So, but it's going to be a tough push. So, anyway, a story that caught my eye today, actually, I just saw it today, was this crazy-ass story that apparently... There is a coordinated effort with the Trump campaign to go into Black communities and give cash giveaways, like as they're having kind of Trump rallies. Have you seen this story, Susan?
I saw it briefly. It seems, appalling.
Really,
yes,
illegal,
but also like totally ineffective. Like I can't imagine that's going to do what they think it's going to do.
I mean, maybe. I mean, like I don't know to what extent. Okay, like so. Apparently, in December, there was something called this Christmas extravaganza in Cleveland, Ohio. They gave, I saw the poster. It said $25,000 cash giveaway. It was organized by an organization called the Urban Revitalization Coalition, which is founded by like one of Trump's most prominent national Black leaders. He's a pastor named Daryl Scott. He's a co-founder of Black Voices for Trump, of the National Diversity Coalition for Trump, and this is one of his organizations. Now, it's branded as a 501c3, which is a charity. This was not a charitable event. They did a lot of messaging for Trump, and then they did a raffle where they gave away envelopes stuffed with cash between $300 to $500. I mean, charities don't do that. there's going to be more. There's another one scheduled for Virginia, I think, next month. But the idea, yes, is to excite Black voters in places where, they're calling it urban revitalization. I don't know how they're going to revitalize community by giving individuals $300, but I don't know.
How's that going to translate into votes? Like, I don't think that that's aside from the ethical issues I've got with it, I've got some technical questions as well.
Yeah, look, maybe one vote at a time and that person gets other people to vote in their family the same way. I don't know, because apparently, like, in the political article that was that covered it, one of the women they interviewed, she had just won one of the cash envelopes, and she's like, yay, Trump, 4 more years. I don't know. I mean, like, he keeps pushing messaging on, like, you know, no president's been better for Black unemployment, for all these other issues, and maybe there's enough obfuscation, is that how you say that word, to make certain Black communities feel like, look, if all these pastors are in on it and all these Black leaders are in on it, then there must be something good here for us.
The polls aren't showing that, though, and I'm not...
That is true.
I'm skeptical this is going to be a worthwhile endeavor for them.
Yeah, you're right. I think that's fair. I think that the polls are certainly not reflecting that. But I'm kind of just shocked at the blatant, like, buying votes scheme here.
I wish I was shocked.
You're not. You're not.
Like, it sounds like the kind of harebrained stupidity they would try. So.
Yeah. All right. So that's some stuff that caught my eye in the last really 2 or 3 days. I don't even know what happened last week. It's a blur.
The politics inferno continues outside of impeachment.
Yeah. The Iowa caucus is also around the corner, right? Is it next week? Is it next week?
That sounds right. That sounds like something that's going to happen.
It's happening, but because of the firestorm. Okay. Firestorm around Trump and the impeachment and so many characters keep from the last episode we did was all about, you know, Parnas and Hyde and Yovanovitch and now a couple of days ago, big Bolton bombshell, if you want to call it that. All right, let's get right into impeachment. We're in the middle of it.
Yes, we have just finished up the 2 day or the 22 days, the 24 hours each side gets over many days.
Can I ask you this, Susan? Did the defense really get 24 hours? Did they really
they
take
didn't use
24
it all.
Hours?
They feel like they used more than they planned to use, more than they intended, but they did not use 24 hours. I could not tell you the exact minute count. Mm. But they were going to use, I think, 2 days was the original plan. They ended up going for 3 because of the Bolton news. But they have now wrapped up, and now we're going to questioning, which is should be a lot more worthwhile in terms of actually expounding on situation than the opening arguments were. But before that, let's go back up. What's happening now? We have the Senate trial. It is the third presidential Senate trial in history, but there's been several, 14, 16, around about there. There have been plenty of others in the course of our history. And typically, it's about federal judges who are on the bench for life.
Yeah.
And if you want to remove them, you got to impeach them. Now, the reason we have such weird, stilted trial rules, it's not because traditionally impeachment trials in the Senate acted this way. It's because of what happened with Clinton. And it's because, in that case, it was apparently a little bit awkward. I don't know. So when they're going into the trial, rather than, doing a trial, they're like, let's ease into this and make sure we really need to put this on, the airwaves. So they did a very, careful approach. They did do witnesses, but they did a lot of closed-door stuff. And it was a little bit, tiptoeing around because of blowjobs. So that's why we have this awful precedent that they're now using in a case where it doesn't apply at all whatsoever.
So what kind of precedent are you talking about? What kind of rules are carry over from Clinton that are really hampering this trial?
A big one is that you don't sign witnesses until after the opening arguments.
Okay.
They're not going to wait till after, till Friday is probably when we'll get the big news if they have the votes or not to call witnesses. Now, in every single impeachment trial that's ever happened, there have always been witnesses, and there have always been witnesses who were not previously called before the House. So this is, the fact it's even on the table is a shocking deviation from precedent. Yeah. It's a sign that we are beyond anything the Constitution is prepared to deal with.
But I've seen so many GOP senators, in the media and stuff, saying, well, that was the House's job. The House should have called the witnesses, and we're just going to consider that, their case, and we don't need to. But that's never happened before.
That's just an excuse. They're full of excuses. The crazy part is, so we have the 24 hours from the Democratic side. There are a lot of good presentations, a lot of good recaps of the evidence.
I gotta say, Speaker Schiff, I thought he really, not Speaker Schiff, Adam Schiff, I thought he was really kind of remarkable. He's
one of a kind. Should be living in the days of William Jennings Bryan and, all those great orators. Listening to him, I'm like, oh, this is why people were so impressed with the great speakers back in the day where you could just contemporaneously. And he does have prepared speeches, but like in the actual impeachment proceeding before the House, a lot of the time he is off the cuff doing that.
He's not even looking at notes. And
oh my
he's
God.
So
no
eloquent.
Attorney.
Yeah. He's really, really.
It's a really impressive. Just purely technically, it is an extremely impressive skill.
Yeah, better than I would say. I thought Obama was a great orator, but I think Schiff, hands down, one of the best.
No, Schiff's another level.
Yeah.
He's beyond any comparisons in modern politics.
Yeah,
he's much more I wouldn't say I've seen trial lawyers that do better than him, but he is probably more akin to a trial lawyer, a very, very experienced, skilled, expensive trial lawyer level. Because politicians don't usually need to be that contemporaneous and that smooth all the time, just off the cuff.
Fantastic. If you missed it, go back and listen to it. It's all online. Okay.
Not that it'll matter because, they're going to... They've had the Republican... The White House's turn came up. And it was dreadful. It was actually really bad. Cipollone was... I'm shocked that Trump allowed him to do that. And I'm sure Trump was seething the whole time because he just wasn't good. It's fine. I wouldn't be good at it either. I'd be terrible. But he was just objectively not good. So why are you there?
All of them, I would think Trump probably watched Sekulow and said, that's my man.
Yeah, but Sekulow was rambling and he wasn't, he was better for sure.
But he was more of an attack dog. And I think that's what Trump likes.
Yes.
But it started off with who opened it up for the defense? Oh my God, who gave...
I think Sekulow kicked it off. Oh, no, it was Cipollone.
No. Was Cipollone? Who gave us the entire, history of, impeachment? Was that Cipollone? I can't remember.
That was Ken Starr.
It was Ken Starr. Thank you. It was Ken Starr. Oh, my
God. Oh, my God.
What was that?
Now, I was not really a watchful observer in the time of the Clinton impeachment. I was too young to really know what was going on.
I learned
certain lessons from the Clinton impeachment that was probably the the sort of things you didn't want kids to learn.
what did the president do,
definitely
mommy?
My first exposure to... Yeah, dude, that's like my main memory of the Clinton impeachment is certain awkward conversations. So I don't really remember Ken Starr that well, but he's been on the TV all the time lately, like the past few years. He's still been around. Watching him give his speech was the biggest fuck you I've ever seen. Like, it was so calculated, so intentional. It was a lol, nothing matters, fuck all y'all.
Yeah.
Because he went on about how impeachment is so damaging and so incredibly bad for the country and how it should never occur for like any reason, essentially. Like, he's on the record from like 92 saying that like you could impeach a president for poisoning a cat, which, you know, maybe like that's like the level of like wrongdoing he's previously said
rises to
like,
that. Yeah,
for him, Clinton's like resistance to certain like interviews and Clinton, by the way, was infinitely ahead of Trump in production because he actually produced something which Trump has not done at all. But Starr then was like, oh, Clinton's obstructing this. That's a reason why he's being impeached. And now he's like, oh, you can't possibly impeach a president just because he won't hand over any witnesses or documents.
He also made the argument, didn't he, that there's no actual crime here. You did an actual crime. Or was that Dershowitz? Maybe that was Dershowitz.
That was all of them, yeah.
Okay. Which it's kind of like, wasn't there a crime? There's kind of a crime. Isn't extortion a crime?
I mean, there was criminal conduct. I mean, that's why it doesn't matter if there's technical criminal conduct. That's not the concern.
Right.
The concern isn't if there happens to be a federal statute on the books that applies to this. The question is it something that is incompatible with being president?
Yeah, and then there's obstruction.
Yeah, like, I mean, technically, so, like, a federal crime has certain jurisdictional requirements. Like, if Trump shot someone on Fifth Avenue, would not be a federal crime. So... I guess you can't impeach for that either.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like that's kind of the argument they're all been making for a long time now.
It is.
It really is, yeah.
But hands down, the worst one was Dershowitz.
Yeah.
And only because after the fact, like at the time I was like, wow, this is really dumb. What the hell? Whatever, who cares? Afterwards, apparently, senators were like the Republican senators were wrapped in their seats. They loved everything about it. They've been citing it constantly after. They fell for Dershowitz's bullshit. Which is so, they didn't fall for it. They wanted to fall for it.
Yeah.
But Dershowitz's claims about there has to be like a federal criminal offense to be indictable. There's literally not a single scholar out there, not a single like legal professor who agrees with this cockamamie theory.
Right.
Like, this is all his bullshit he's coming up with because he wants to have, like, in Dershowitz's world, there's not an event that occurs that's not secretly about him.
Mm.
Like,
ooh,
to him, this impeachment's really about him and showing how smart he is and how he has the real key. He's the only neutral, true observer of the truth. And here he is to show you
the way.
He
was incredibly condescending, but he also did say, I didn't do my research last time around, and I kind of did my research this time, and so this is what it is. But he did the very much so the kind of the professorial type of like, you know, I'm this eminent scholar here and...
But there's no basis in the scholarship for what he's saying. His claims are now being parroted by Republican senators. They're going to be part of like future precedent because they're like, oh, last time around, everyone said it had to be a crime.
I mean,
but there's no basis in like the truth. That's nothing to like. Even Turley, who was just as in love with attention as Dershowitz is like, whoa, Dershowitz, you're going a bit too far there. So, Rabia, we have talked about third love before, but I have a confession to make.
Okay.
The first third love bra that I bought, I may have skipped the whole Fit Finder thing. I was like, I know my size. Like, sure,
what?
A lot of them don't, but like, it's whatever. I know my size. It's fine. And it's mostly fine. I'm lazy. What can I say?
I'm guessing you don't really know yours. Most women don't know their size.
But I bought a second bra from them, and then I did actually take the quiz because I'm like, hell, why not? Yeah, I had it wrong. I was close, but definitely wrong. The new one actually fits better, so I know my size is not what I thought it was.
The Fit Finder quiz by Third Love is kind of amazing because over 15 million women have taken the quiz, so they have tons of data. It's fun. It takes less than a minute. And they also take into factor your breast shape, not just like the cup size and the band size, but your breast shape. So they'll let you know, not just what your breast size is, but also the styles that fit your body according to your shape.
Yeah, and take it from me, if you think you're a 36B, double check that, make sure you're not a 34C.
Well, Third Love does bras differently because they believe every woman deserves to feel comfortable and confident every day. They've got over 80 bra sizes, which is insane. And if somebody does what you did and just kind of decides to order because, you know, they're all pretty and maybe they don't want to go through the fit finder thing, you've got 60 days to wash and wear your bra. And if you don't love it, your returns are free.
But you will, because they're hands down the most comfortable bras you'll ever own.
They're very comfortable. My favorite part of the whole design is that there's no tag on the band. It's a printed label on the band, and I love that because I hate that little tag in the back of your bras.
It's the most obvious thing in the world. I don't understand why every other bra company is stupid, but...
Third Love knows it's a perfect bra for everybody, so right now they're offering our listeners 15% off your first order. Go to thirdlove.com/45th now to find your perfect fitting bra and get 15% off your first purchase. That's thirdlove.com/45th for 15% off today. So some of the arguments they raise like every kind of circuit. Now, what's interesting is they didn't argue a lot of like the allegations of fact. I mean, like it was kind of like circular, which is what it's been, I guess. But it was kind of like whatever he did wasn't a crime or impeachable. Also,
at first they were going full on saying, no, none of this ever happened.
Right.
Everyone who said it did is a liar. Also, no one has said it happened. There's no evidence of this. It's all made up.
There's no witnesses who saw it firsthand. Yeah.
Then after day like one and a half, it suddenly flipped. And they're like, oh, doesn't matter if he did it because that's fine. Which, of course, is timed with when the Bolton news broke about his forthcoming book with the worst, tackiest title in the history of books, at least this year, The Room Where It Happened.
I thought it was actually pretty smart. I thought it's a pretty smart title. I mean, given... okay, fine. It's gross in a way. But I'm talking about it in terms of marketing and selling. I'm like,
I'm sure he didn't choose it. I'm sure Simon Schuster did.
Yeah, definitely.
But that book came out, and the whole time they're like, oh, there's no one with firsthand knowledge who's ever said that Trump did this. And Bolton's like, well, I will make sure my book gets public attention and that, like, the White House can't shut it down. So it's time to leak right now. Actually, I don't even know if Bolton really did it. I'm sure his publisher did it. He didn't need to be involved.
Well, so let's talk about like what happened here. Apparently, about a month ago, Bolton's or Simon and Schuster provided the National Security Council, the White House, one hard copy of the book to review because that is protocol to make sure there's nothing in there that would be like they'd have to pull out. You know, can't publish.
It's not protocol; it's a law, actually.
Oh, it's a law. Okay.
Yeah.
To make sure there's nothing in there that's like classified or privileged or something like that. So they do it a review. Then apparently, there's reports that they took the hard copy and made a bunch of copies of it. They've had this since, I think, December is what they're saying, for at least a month or so. Now, this also, I saw some tweets, and I don't know if we're getting to conspiracy theory area, saying that right after the White House got a copy of this is when Trump ordered the strike on Soleimani. And people are saying, well, maybe he was really trying to make Bolton happy because Bolton's been trying to get somebody killed.
Why would he like
forever.
Make Bolton? Oh, he's trying to buy him off. Like, hey, look, I'll keep bombing people as long as you don't publish your book.
You know, so I mean, he's wanted like war on Iran. Bolton's wanted that forever. He's wanted Soleimani taken out for a long time. So, and he
so
tweeted
that was his
about
attempt
it.
At a quid pro quo with Bolton. I'll keep bombing people as long as you don't publish.
Well, it didn't work. So now the question is, where did this leak come from into the media? Is it if it's not the National Security Council? Is it?
And, I don't know. It could be. I honestly think it's possible it really was his publisher who wants to make sure that they get
that makes sense.
Maximum marketing value.
Why wouldn't they? Yeah, that makes sense.
But like also everyone always knew this was going to happen. No one seriously doubted that's what like if Bolton told the truth, which he'd probably would because that's the kind of guy.
Why
like,
are they waiting till March to publish this though? Why wouldn't they try to push this out like before the trial began? Before the Senate trial began, at least. Or before
because
the House.
They'll make more money this way.
Will they really?
This is more hype? Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I can't imagine. I would think it would be huge hype if he was called to testify.
Oh, there's hype right now. Now they can push to publish it in, like, February or March. But, like, and now it's gotten more attention. If they dropped it earlier, I mean, whatever. It's got attention now. It's going to get sales if they ever get to publish it. Because apparently today Trump issued some kind of threat.
A formal threat.
I don't even know what that means in the context of pre-publication review.
I think it's a tweet. I mean, it's probably a letter from a lawyer saying, you know.
Yeah, but I don't. There's like a formal process here that they follow to determine whether like ex-executive branch officials have, you know, publish something they can't. Or, I don't know what's going on. Anyway, they're going to try and stop it.
They will get it tied up in court, probably. And that can, I think, push the publication. But it doesn't mean Bolton can't just go public and start giving interviews about this stuff, even if he's not.
Well, he shouldn't, though, because he needs to talk under oath. That's where I'm at the most. Yeah. And right now, what they're trying to, the Republican senators are trying to do is to find a way they can claim to say they heard his testimony or heard his story. And so they didn't decide without that. They had full information, but not actually have him under oath where it matters.
Okay, so can we talk a little bit about what that leak was? Like, what did it say? What is in his book?
The parts that we've seen so far have to do with his concern. Or one, like an August meeting. I think it was August probably 18th or 19th, based on what he describes, where he was having one of the dozen times he attempted to convince Trump to release the security assistance to Ukraine. And Trump said, nah, I don't want to until they help with investigations. Now, I have questions over the specific wording of the New York Times article about what exactly Bolton's describing in his book. But the gist is clear. There was a quid pro quo in Trump's mind that he ain't releasing that aid until Ukraine helps him investigate Clinton and Biden. So, like on a dime, we suddenly have senators who for weeks have been saying, oh, the Democrats are just lying. Schiff is making shit up. This is all nonsense. And never, like, this is all false smears against the president. And now they're like, it doesn't matter. Like, sure. Like, of course Trump did that. It's not a problem. It's not impeachable.
Well, they're saying that it's completely within the purview of the president. And, you know, giving examples that, okay, he also held aid here. But it's in the purview of the president to make sure that we're not giving our money and we're not, like, you know, giving aid to countries with corruption. But nobody seems to be bringing up the fact that Trump was not interested in any other corruption anywhere in the world other than this. In the Ukraine, this is the only corruption he was interested in. Like, Hunter Biden from, like, what, years ago? Like, this one thing? I mean, that's it? But I'm hoping that comes up, like, in the next couple of days in the questioning.
Well, Graham's already taken the theory that as long as the president may have had a permissible purpose in his mind, whatever he does is fine. That's what he's been tweeting out today, which is, again, crazy talk. But the thing is, even if you if you bent over backwards and pretended to be as naive as possible, the Hunter Biden stuff got reported in 2014. Why did Trump wait until exactly when Biden announces his 2020 campaign to actually start pushing for an investigation publicly? If it was this big of a concern, why didn't you do it in 2017 or 2018 or 2019 even? Or, like, earlier on. Like, why wait until, like, April, March, right when he's announcing his bid?
Because he just didn't care. It's not about that.
It's obviously fucking corrupt as shit. Like, there's not even a question here. Everyone knows. I mean, everyone knows. And then here's where I get terrified for the future and here where I see, like, we're in a dilemma that I don't see a good way out of. Republican senators know that no matter what Trump has done, no matter what crimes he's committed or what corruption he's engaged in, they're not going to remove him. So they're now in a place where their only motivation is to keep it from being public how much they're willing to put up with, which is infinite amount of bullshit from him. So their only motivation is to try and hide the fact or to minimize the fact that Trump has engaged in all these crimes, because even if they're proven, it wouldn't ever change most of their minds. Romney, maybe. I think Romney is the only one who could realistically ever vote to remove him.
You know, one of the most confusing things to me about this is that I feel like, don't all these senators see how much of a danger Trump is to their own career? Because they're feeding this beast that is going to devour them, has devoured them and their party. They're going to let Trump off the hook. Then Trump's kids are going to run. It's going to be a Trump dynasty ruling the GOP forever. And they will always live in this fear. Like, how are they going to? This is actually an opportunity for them to, like, kill the beast now.
I think they see a bigger threat to opposing him than to going along with it. They're willing to sacrifice their senatorial powers.
But that's not true, though, because if any of them
primaries, they believe that the GOP base is totally beholden to Trump. They believe that no Republican in anything but the most purplest areas has no chance unless the primary voters, unless Trump's base is okay with them. And if Trump turns on any of them, he can make his base primary them out of office.
Well, Trump certainly does. Okay. Oh, yeah. By the way, about that, wasn't there a story that came out a couple days ago that I think CNN reported that apparently some, like, threat was issued to senators if anybody voted against Trump, like, their head would be on a pike, and then a number of senators were like,
and then they all got pissy when Schiff mentioned it.
Yes. However, he did then, didn't Trump then tweet a threat directly against Adam Schiff, What did he say about Adam Schiff? Do you remember?
He has not faced consequences yet.
Right, yet.
Something bullshit.
And then today, this is what he tweeted about Bolton. It's two tweets. For a guy who couldn't get approved for the ambassador to the UN years ago, couldn't get approved for anything since, begged me for a non-Senate approved job, which I gave him, despite many saying, don't do it, sir. Takes the job, mistakenly says Libyan model on TV. What? And many more mistakes of judgment, gets fired because, frankly, if I listened to him, we would be in World War VI by now, and goes out and immediately writes a nasty and untrue book, all classified national security. Who would do this?
It's a funny thing how all these totally incompetent, terrible people keep ending up in the White House.
I know.
Can't imagine, like, man, what bad luck Trump has.
Who's hiring these idiots?
God, like, you just really, really terrible luck all the time. You just keep hiring these people that no one else would ever hire, but they come begging you for a job, and for some reason, when some total fucking moron begs you for a job, you can't say no.
I feel like we're in the, like, total fog of war with all of this stuff. I mean, Trump has so completely destroyed, like, any trust in, like, I mean, like, what just happened with, like, the NPR reporter and Pompeo? I mean, like, that was shocking. I'm still shocked at it. I can't get over it. And I think
we're past the era of truth. Like, we're no longer, like, right. I don't, like, not to be alarmist, not to be, like, a doomsayer, but, like, I don't see an easy way back. I don't know if there is one at all, but this is not democratic. This is not.
Yeah. They've destroyed
our shared commitment to the truth is all we have to rely on for democracy. And we do not have any shared commitment to the truth. There's no longer a concern if the truth is truth. No one. It's bad.
Yeah. and on Bolton, the connection there on Bolton is that now I've heard Senator and Trump surrogate saying, well, if Bolton was an important witness in the House, should have called him. Well, the House tried. I mean, like, so it's not, you know, they keep putting this stuff out into the ether. If you watch Fox News to their base, completely just lying. It's just straight up lies.
And when they're caught, they're gonna be like, oh, it doesn't matter because he can do that anyway. And the power they're trying to say Trump has is fundamentally incompatible with democracy. You can, like, what happened? Okay, God, like, let's say no witnesses are called, which I think is very likely. Not guaranteed yet, but very likely. Trump is acquitted. He has already planned a victory tour to give. At that point, we now have a president who
completely abused
the power of his office to try to basically rig an election, was caught red-handed. Evans was overwhelming. Even if they acquitted him, they basically were forced to acknowledge that he did that stuff. They just didn't care. Where do you go from there? If Trump does it again, what do you do? Yeah, sure, they can try and impeach him again, but they'll just be like, well, last time abuse of power didn't matter, so why did it matter this time? There is no floor. There is nothing he could do. Well, there's some things he could do, but nothing that he actually probably would do. Like, this is such an expansive grant of power to the presidency that there's no way to stop it. Like, there's nowhere from here to go. He can do whatever he wants now.
And between now and the election, he will do whatever it takes to hold on to the presidency. And so that's the thing. And I feel
he's going to keep using the same scam that he's done on Biden.
Right.
And I am not by no means am I a Biden fan. I wish he hadn't run.
Right. Same.
I might wish
that now too.
I have zero interest in a Biden presidency. But this is an effective tactic Trump is using because he's managed to survive the fact he did impeachable crimes to get there. He will use this to harm Biden and could potentially sabotage his chances in the primary. And right now, his rival is the one he wants the most, Bernie Sanders. And flat out, I hope to God I'm wrong if he's the nominee. I do not think Bernie Sanders can win. I think he's the one person on the field right now who Trump will
trounce.
Yes. Trump could actually win something close to a majority of the popular vote.
Yeah.
And totally just win Electoral College. So Trump's plan here might work.
Although
Trump may
succeed
in sabotaging someone who, I think Biden would win. I don't want him, but I think he probably would win.
Yeah. Well, I mean, like, whenever they show the polls of, like, every Democratic candidate versus Trump, every single one of them does win. And I think a lot of that's because I've seen this over and over again. And I apologize to any of our listeners who don't feel the same way, but I have seen this over and over again. I literally just had a whole conversation, an argument with a woman who's just, like, a local, I mean, she's a Democrat in Maryland who's a, you know, progressive activist here, but she's like, look, if Bernie doesn't get the nomination, I can't promise I'm going to vote. And over and over again, I see people from who support, you know, Pete, who support Warren, who support Biden say, this is my candidate, but if they don't get it, I will support whoever wins the primaries. And I feel the same way. I've endorsed Elizabeth Warren. But I don't care who gets nomination in the Democrat Party. I will vote for that person. But then I
I'll
feel
vote
like
for Bernie Sanders. But like, I dude, this is nothing good.
But there is like a subsect of Bernie Sanders supporters who say, I will not vote for anybody but Bernie Sanders. And that's what scares me.
Because he's not a Democrat. Like, yeah. He is. I mean, part of me is just finds him kind of reprehensible just for that, which it's more complicated and all that. But also, if you're going to be run for the nomination of that party, be a part of that party. Like, if you're an independent, you're an independent. Like, that's one thing. Sure, there's good, noble reasons to do that. But really, you're just trying to be like, oh, I'm different and unique, but let me be part of the Democratic establishment the whole time and then whine when I feel like I'm being untreated fairly as a Democrat when I'm not even one.
You're not even one. Exactly.
But that's personal. That's just, I think, one, I don't think Bernie would be a good president. I don't have any interest in him. I am not, I mean, like, Elizabeth Warren isn't that different, but I'd be much more comfortable with her.
I think Elizabeth Warren is able to get stuff done, and I think she's much more effective.
I hate her trade policies. They cause me, like, physical pain.
Oh,
but
is that right?
Okay. I would be like, oh, whatever. I would suck it up. We'll get through it. It's fine. I think Bernie Sanders is going to have a much tougher time if he does become the nominee. He's never faced serious scrutiny.
Trump has said it sounds like Trump is not going to go to any, he won't debate anybody. That's what it sounds like.
Oh, he's not going to debate.
What the hell is that going to look like?
I'm just tired of all these old white men. Like, can we just have someone who's not an old white man, for the love of God?
A young white man.
So,
no, that's kind of like where I am on Warren too. I mean, one of the biggest reasons I really think it's time for a female president. I feel like we need, like, how can we be like one of the only nations in the world who has not yet had this opportunity to be under female leadership? But along with that, I do support many of her policies, so it's not just that. Obviously, if it was Tulsi Gabbard, I'd be, conflicted.
Okay. I wouldn't vote for Tulsi Gabbard.
I wouldn't vote for Tulsi Gabbard. I don't know what I would do. I would just move to Canada.
But all that being, okay, the point being, there is a scenario. Whatever your feelings are on Bernie or Biden, all that, there is a scenario here where Trump's ultimate plan actually works out. Mm. He knocks out a competitor who would have beaten him and manages to run against someone who loses horribly because of Trump's abuse of power in Ukraine.
Yeah, I mean, the acquittal is, I think, like a foregone conclusion. I can't even imagine what, I mean, like, I don't, I am seeing, though, that there are, like, just massive amounts of phone calls going into senators demanding witnesses. So I don't know what that's going to look like. Is it going to look like a one-for-one? Okay, fine. We call witnesses on Trump stuff, but then you're going to call the Biden witnesses, too. Again, it's not going to matter. They're going to quit. So we just got to move on.
But my hope had always been a different. My hope had been, I thought he'd be acquitted, but my hope was that there'd be more pushback in the Senate. The House is going to be the fawning lapdog it always is. But I thought maybe the senators would be like, okay, well, there's a way we can acquit him while giving him a slap on the wrist and making it clear, dude, we're not going to remove you, but cut this shit out. And they're not doing that. That is not what happened. My best case scenario is definitely not coming true.
Is the Senate flippable in 2020?
I don't think.
I think Georgia just came into play. I read that Georgia could go blue.
Yeah, I can't remember who's up for it. It would be a stretch, but we'll see.
If the Senate can flip, then I feel like, okay, then something can be done. Then this president can be removed. Even if it's in the second term, he can be removed. He could be impeached again and then actually removed.
Yeah.
So there's that. So part of me thinks, okay, forget the presidential race. We got to, like, really focus on the Senate,
the Republican hold on the Senate will be cut down a little bit, minimum, guaranteed, I think, because what they're doing is extremely unpopular. And also, Trump is guilty as hell. Like, the evidence is not that hard to get, and it will come out. So they've made a calculation. They know it's not going to be great, but they think they're better off just getting this done and moving on, even knowing they'll get, hit here and there constantly for a few months with all this overwhelming evidence comes out that Trump did this shit. But you know what, maybe I do not think it's a foregone conclusion. I think witnesses could still potentially be called. We'll find out soon. But let's pretend for a moment that witnesses will get called and that there'll be more votes in favor than opposed to. I don't want a scenario where it's like one witness, Bolton. That would suck. But assuming that we have like an actual expansive field of witnesses, who should we hear from? Like, who do we need to hear from at this point?
What do you think?
I think, well, Bolton, of course, but he's not my top choice. My
first
Parnas
round really
draft
wants
pick,
to talk. Parnas really wants to
he's
talk.
Like, he's on the list. He's making the cut. But my first round draft pick is Mulvaney, hands down, all the way.
Okay.
Well, he's both chief of staff and he's the head of OMB. So, the presidency and OMB were two of the major players in this, the mechanics of this operation. So he can definitively answer lots of questions that there are no answers to so far. Like, well, I'll rephrase that. He can give the obvious answer to questions that they have not tried to answer, but we all know what freaking happened.
But wouldn't, like, executive privilege, I mean, as chief of staff, apply to Mulvaney?
No, because he's also, well, one, they've never invoked executive privilege. They're probably not going to for various reasons, because technically they have no leg to stand on, and it would do them more harm to actually assert it than to not. Two, OMB would be, he has to talk about what he did, like how he, like what orders he gave, what the reasons were.
Okay.
I mean, yes, they can try and weasel out some stuff, but like he was involved in the mechanics of it. He's also talked about it publicly, which means executive privilege no longer applies.
Right.
So he's my first round choice. After that, I do want Bolton. I think Bolton is, I think he'll be less helpful than some people seem to think, but he does know some very key events that I think he will tell the truth on. I think he'll dodge the hell out of other parts of it, but I think there's a few key things that he will say truthfully under oath if called.
Where are you on a scale of 1 to 10 on thinking that maybe Bolton was the whistleblower?
No, he didn't do it.
You don't think so?
He was. We know who it is. It's a just regular employee.
Okay.
And Bolton, that's not his strategy. But so yeah, Bolton, he'd be there. I also want Duffy. He can speak to. I'm not sure how much direct Trump contact he had, but I think he is key to actually understand how the government operated here, like what calls were made to get the money stopped and how it got flowing again, what reasons there were, what was communicated up and down the chain. His role gives him a view of that that no one else, I think, can speak to fully. So if you want to have a comprehensive, like, no doubts left, call Duffy. Sondland. I say call Sondland again. He's the only one from the House that I think we need to call again, because Sondland lied his ass off, and now there's evidence going to be used to impeach him. So call him, impeach his ass, and see what he does. And then Parnas. Parnas gets his way. Call him up there.
Giuliani, because he'll be so much fun. He really wants to be called.
I think so. My list also has Giuliani and Eisenberg. Eisenberg's the NSA attorney. I think that is a pipe dream. They'll claim like some kind of attorney-client privilege, which wouldn't be recognized in the Senate, but they'll recognize it anyway. I don't think practically we'll get them. But if you actually wanted to know the full truth, you need both of them. But also Giuliani would just lie. So how far would it really get us anyway?
Oh, dude, Giuliani, didn't his podcast drop last week? Like he said it was coming out.
It was a YouTube video. It was not a podcast.
Susan, please tell me you're lying. What?
It was a YouTube video and I watched it and it was really bad.
Oh. That's why he was so confused, because he gave an interview and he said, my podcast drops next week. Make sure to watch it. And I'm like, wait, what?
Oh, it was a YouTube video.
A YouTube video. Maybe they're making an audio version of it and that's his podcast. Okay, he's confused, but okay.
I don't think he knows what a podcast is.
Maybe that's why he doesn't know what a podcast is. Okay. All right. Pompeo. What do you think about Pompeo?
I think Pompeo would also lie. So he's lower my list because he, and also what he knows is important and like damning, but a little bit, I mean, his main testimony would be, yes, I knew this alternate back channel was going and I did nothing about it. I just rolled over and played dead and I tried to make things work on the official channels because that's what we're supposed to do. So he will testify to stuff we mostly already know and probably lie about most of it. The things that if he told the truth, I'd most want him to put on the record has to do with his conversations with Giuliani and how early on Giuliani tried to get Pompeo to help him fire Yovanovitch. I want to know what Pompeo did. I want to know how he responded to that, what he told Trump. According to Bolton, Pompeo was aware that Giuliani's motivations for wanting Yovanovitch out likely had to do with his client's monetary business interest. I want to know what Pompeo knew about that and when, and what he told Trump about that.
But again, do you think Barr has any, like, there's any implication against Barr in any of this?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But he's not ever going to be called. So I didn't even add him to the list. I don't think Barr would. I mean, Barr is just a weasel. Like, I think he's far more competent than Pompeo is. And I think Barr saw the dangers more readily. And he thought he could navigate them. But I think he probably exposed himself substantially anyway. We'll talk about more about that later. There's a whole universe stuff there, but that's why he's not on the
list.
And
it seems pretty clear now that the vice president kind of knew everything that was, he was involved in all of this.
Yeah, I put Pence on my list. It's my, you know, last vote throwaway. It would never, ever work. They'll never, ever allow it. But Yeah. Pence knows.
Yeah. All right.
Anyone you'd call is not on the list.
Gosh. I think that's pretty comprehensive. Hyde would just be fun.
Oh God, no.
No. But again, here's the thing though. You know, every single one of these people could testify, they could be impeached, cross-examined, destroyed, and they would still acquit him.
And I think that's why there's not gonna be witnesses called, because the Republicans, they know they're not gonna remove him. And they know they can't have the truth come out. There's no advantage to them.
Oh, by the way, I wanted to ask you about this. Chief Justice Roberts, okay. Like, literally, what is this man's role? I feel like, does he have no, can't he subpoena, like, documents and witness or order them to appear? Like, does he have no power in all of these proceedings?
He has the power that the Senate gives him.
Whatever they decide in mm-hmm. this proceeding,
if they can get 51 votes for it, he can have that power. But right now, he is largely ceremonial. His job is to sit there and both sides, everyone, and chide them for not living up to the Senate's lofty role of the greatest deliberative body to ever exist. Yeah, it's a thing. That's his job.
Here's what I want to know. Is there any way to draw this out, like, up until the election, just to keep Trump upset, occupied, angry, keep it in the, like, my thing is, they're going to acquit him, it's going to be over, he's going to go on his victory lap, people are going to literally forget it by, like, August. It's going to be over.
I think that it depends on how firm his control is over DOJ. Giuliani should have been indicted already. Giuliani should already have a bunch of charges against him. They're obviously not going to charge him before the Senate trial's over, but the question is if they will charge him at all. Is Barr willing to force his attorneys to refuse to indict someone who should definitely be indicted or not? If he gets indicted, then that's going to stretch it out for a while. And still, you have Parnas and you have they keep saying they're going to have more charges and then don't have them. But if they have more charges, that will likely further implicate the Trump side of the scandal. Right now, what he's been indicted for does intersect with the whole Yovanovitch Ukraine thing, but it's a distinct set of wrongdoing that's the ultimate goal of that scheme was independent of Trump. If they do more charges, they likely will not be independent of Trump. And again, that will, I mean, the story is not just going to disappear. It will eventually die out, but not the day he's acquitted. Not a month after that, because there's so much here that
is yet to unfold.
Yes.
Well, I mean, apparently Parnas and his attorney have showed up at the Senate. I guess they're going to sit through the next couple of days or something.
Well, Parnas is not going to, because you can't get in there with electronics.
And, does he have a monitor?
He's got a little anklet on that's going to stop him from entering the Senate.
I guess he's going to hang out outside. But one thing we didn't mention was the story that just broke not in the last week about the secret recording, which is also shocking that they were able to do this. He secretly recorded like almost a 90-minute conversation. Did you watch the whole thing? Watch the was it a
I
video? Or?
I live tweeted it out.
All right, so
I endured it.
411.
If you want to, you know what? I'm not reliving that awful experience. So you can go read the tweet thread.
It
was a bunch of nonsense.
Okay.
It was nothing. So there were parts that were interesting and important, but mostly it was kind of what you'd expect. Like, it's a bunch of people with access to the president trying to make sure
he
does policies
yeah.
that are, you know, beneficial to their business. Now, we're running out of time, so I'm not going to get to it, but there's a whole lot more on Parnas. I will hopefully, knock on wood, have a blog post up today, maybe, hopefully, probably. So with some more stuff on what Parnas has said and some more deep dives there are coming. But Parnas is, I hope they call him. I mean, he wants to be called because he has his own agenda here, which is to try and avoid legal liability.
Right.
So you know what? Fine. I'm okay with that. He's already going to have some legal trouble he can't escape. I'm okay with him potentially getting off for more crimes he's done. But Parnas has a lot of interesting stuff to say. And far more importantly, he has access to a lot of interesting materials that the president can't block.
Yeah. Where is that blog post going to be, Susan?
On View from L2.
So. View from L2. Okay, on your personal blog. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else you want to mention before we close out for today?
I promise next week I'll get more into the Parnas stuff because there's some wild shit there.
He's not going away anytime soon.
Oh, he's... Well, he may be going to prison.
In the story, I mean. Yes. These guys are straight up... I mean, like, you know there's more recordings. There's so much more there. And I can't wait.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. All right. Well, let's, I guess... sign off and go watch the Senate drill the impeachment managers and also the defense team. I can't wait to see how Dershowitz does. All right. All right. Thanks so much, Susan. And thank you guys for tuning in. We'll be back in 7 days.
Till then. Bye, guys.
A big thanks to all our listeners for tuning in to the 45th podcast week after week. And if you'd like to give us further support, you can do that by becoming a patron at patreon.com/45thpod. By doing so, you can become a supporter and patron for as little as $5 a month. And to do so, again, go to patreon.com/45thpod. A shout out and thank you to our sponsors. They make this program possible. And I urge our listeners to please check out our sponsors and use their products. And thank you to them for helping us produce week after week. Thank you to our audio producer, Hannah McCarthy, our executive producer, Meethal Thelhan. And you can find us on social media. We are on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram. Our handle is at 45th Pod. Our website is www.45thpod.com. Thanks again for tuning in. See you next week.